in fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
CRIMEWAV. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit.
Consider yourselves warned. I
Past Due by Eric Buettner. That's it. Fuck this. I'm out of here. Carlos reached for the handle on the passenger door, but I grabbed his arm and held him in place on the front seat of the car. You can't just ditch me, man, I pleaded. You didn't say nothing about it being Charlie Briggs. He's a psycho. All these guys are psychos. I don't want to be on his bad side, not even for you. Carlos jerked his arm from my grip and punched open the door. A blast of cold air from outside swept through the front seat like a nor'easter. I shivered, but I wasn't quite sure if it was from the cold. If Carlos was abandoning me at this stage of the game, I was fast running out of options. Pay the money, man. That's all you can do, was his parting advice. He slammed the door and the cold was trapped inside, left to fight it out with the heater, which was already fighting a losing battle with the aging battery in the even older engine of the positively ancient Oldsmobile. Carlos was supposed to be my muscle. Years ago, I faced the fact that I don't have any, so if it wasn't Carlos, it was any number of other guys who have more muscle than they can use, so they rent it out to weaklings like me. Guys who owe money. Money they don't have. It was $10,000. Not too bad. I've been down in deeper holes than that. But when I couldn't get that up in time, it turned to $20,000, then $40,000, and now $80,000. $80,000 in the hole to Charlie Briggs wasn't a place that even the most seasoned spelunker wanted to be. Last week, on the due date, which came and went with no payment from me, two thick-necked types in black suits and turtlenecks paid a visit to my mom. An 82-year-old woman who has nothing to do with this now uses a walker and takes more Vicodin than a woman half her age should be on. That just ain't right. They made some threats to her, but she didn't know what the hell they were on about. She thinks some gang of toughs broke in for fun just to beat up an old lady. Originally she had said rape, but she was still just worked up from the invasion. I love my mom to death, but even I know no one wants to rape her. Come on. Another week has passed and none of my contacts panned out. I'm looking at 160,000 next week. Things are starting to look a little, you know, bleak. That's why Carlos. Hell, it was worth a shot. Midnight was approaching, the next meetup. Briggs himself never shows. He's got an army of Carloses and they all know my face and carry a balance sheet in their pockets. Goddamn turtlenecks look ridiculous. My plan B, or EFGH at this point, was to make some sort of down payment. That meant going by Gina's. That meant getting a tongue lashing, and not the good kind. Gina was the woman scorned, and she had a hot enough temper when we were together. Now, though, sheesh. I knocked on her door, and I knew as soon as I had done it, I'd bang too loud. She was already pissed off before she even got to the peephole. I saw the shadow over the tiny lens, and I heard her mutter something foul. The door opened, but the chain stayed in place. I started right in with contrition. I know it's late, I know you told me not to come, and I know you don't want to see me. You know a lot. You know that if you don't get your ass out of here in about 10 seconds, I'm calling the police? You wouldn't call the police. I gave her the eyes. She used to give me whatever I wanted with the eyes. Not anymore. You're right, but I will call Maurice. I shivered again. My old partner, now with my old girl. Things ended badly between all three of us. I wasn't anxious to have to explain myself to him right now. I was having a hard enough time trying to negotiate my way past this border to what used to be our apartment. I always told Gina that she should work for Homeland Security and stop terrorists from coming into our country. She don't give an inch for nobody. I swear this is the last time I'll ever come here again, but this is life or death. Can I get that in writing? I'll put it in blood. The door closed, and a few seconds later it opened up again, but the chain was still in place. Gina was holding a small knife through the opening. She stared me down, and although I couldn't see it behind the half-closed door, I knew she was jutting that hip out to one side the way she did. I took the knife and didn't think twice. I sliced my finger and showed her the blood that bubbled to the surface. She knew I was serious. It was our thing. Long story. The door opened fully and I stepped in. Maurice had been treating her right. The couch was new and the TV was one of those big plasma flat screens. It still played shitty reality shows and Gossip Girl, but it was big and loud. I just need to get something I left here. I peeked over her shoulder and spotted the clock on the wall. 10:37. Still time, but midnight would be here soon. I could start to feel the sweat rise in dots on my forehead the way it does when I get stressed. Jeannie used to give me shit for how much I sweat. Said when I came home from a job, I smelled like a locker room hamper full of jock straps. Crime can be stressful. What can I say? You don't have a damn thing here anymore. There went that hip. She was still beautiful. Sicilian and Puerto Rican. A deadly combination. Black hair, blacker heart. I love them both. Why the hell did I ever cheat on her? You don't know about it. Take me 10 seconds and then I'm gone for good. Something terribly dramatic happened on her reality show when she was distracted for a split second, in which I moved to the bathroom. I shut the door behind me and ignored her banging once I had the lock set. I moved quickly to the medicine cabinet, one of those cheap contractor-grade tin ones with the flip-out mirror door. What I wanted was behind it. I tugged at it and got a little bit of movement, then I found a hairbrush with a wooden handle that I wedged into the gap to pry it the rest of the way off the wall. It came down with a crash, and the contents spilled out into the sink, and the mirror cracked, but didn't shatter glass everywhere. At least that was good. Gina went nuts, banging and screaming. She said she was off to call Maurice. I was going nuts myself. Taped to the back was a gun. Fine, I'd put that there. The 10 grand I'd also put there was missing. Just a remnant of duct tape outlining where it used to be. I flipped over the cheap cabinet to see if it had fallen off and ended up mixed with the toothpaste and... what was that? Valtrex? Fucking Maurice. It hadn't. Now I was pissed. I spotted some band-aids in the jumble of junk and wrapped one around my finger where I had sliced myself. Now it seemed that that was an unnecessary sacrifice, what with the money gone. I got pissed for what I let myself do for Gina. I pocketed the gun and burst out into the apartment. Where the hell is it? I demanded, trying on my best tough guy voice. My best, not the best. Gina was just hanging up the phone. Not good. Where is what? She still had the knife in her hand. You know what? No, I don't. The money, my emergency fund, on the back of the medicine cabinet. I don't fucking know. Maurice was in there a few weeks ago, did the same shit, breaking everything. He must have it. You can ask him when he gets here. I brought the gun back in a striking position, ready to pistol whip the girl I used to love. She flinched and I rushed forward. It was the first time I actually saw her scared of me. Not as scared as I was of myself. I didn't want to beat Gina. I just wanted the money and for Briggs to stop hurting my mom. A run-in with Maurice wasn't going to help the situation, so I lowered my arm, satisfied that I got her to cower, and left my old home. I stopped at the S&M dinette. Sal and Mario died, never knowing what was so funny about the name. An ex-con named Qualls ran the place now, and he was the only one behind the counter at 10:53 when I entered. He knew me well enough to not like me. Seems like it's only a matter of time for most everyone. Coffee, I said. He nodded and turned his back on me to get it. I drummed my fingers like Buddy Rich on the counter. When Qualls came by to pour, he looked down at them and waited for me to stop before he filled my cup. I felt like a schoolboy scolded by a history professor, one that could kill me as soon as put me in detention. Maybe with the speed of the caffeine I could think. I couldn't. I drummed more, spun on my stool, ran my fingers through my hair, felt it thinning as I did, and turned to tapping my foot. Qualls kept shooting me looks like I was jerking off in church. It was his joint, though. Can I use the phone? No. Qualls was a lifelong smoker. All it took was that two-letter word to tell. Come on, Qualls, I'll leave you a quarter. Said no. He sipped at his own cup of coffee. Maybe it was decaf, but he moved slow as a stretch in jail and twice as quiet. It's really important, I whined. He'd said his piece and now just looked right past me. It's about my mom. She's 80-something and in poor health. Not a thing registered on his face. Jesus, Qualls, even a single-cell organism like you had to have a mother. He set his cup down and let me know silently that I should shut up. Behind me, a voice joined the conversation. If you're planning on calling Mr. Briggs, just tell me and I can take a message to him. I spun my stool around and saw one of the goons whose name I didn't know or care to. He stood, a tower of black from the high sheen of his shoes up to the turtleneck and back down to the leather gloves on his hands. This wasn't Manny, the guy I was supposed to meet. You're early. I tried to swallow, but my throat tightened up and I couldn't quite get it down. I'm not here to collect, just passing by, keeping an eye on you. An eye on me? He had spies? I got another hour. So you do. He waited for me to continue. I had nothing. He flexed the leather gloves with a squeak. So, I tried to shoo him away. At midnight, then. Like I was confirming a dinner reservation. Until then. If he had a hat, he would have tipped it. He moved to the door. By the way, he said with a smug smile, if you need me to get a message to your mother, I can do that too. I'll be seeing her. He waved and left. The bell over the door tinkled like a cat's collar. I was seething at the implied threat and scared shitless at my lack of anything to do about it. Both feelings got turned up a notch when I felt the cold metal against my ear. The long chambers of the double barrels amplify the cocking of the hammer, the sound ricocheting against the inside of my skull. I shifted my eyes enough to see the mirror behind the counter and saw Qualls with the shotgun pressed to my head. Get out, he said, so quiet I almost had to ask him to repeat it. I got the drift, though. I eased down from the stool and moved slowly toward the door, wondering if I should stop long enough to fish out a dollar for the coffee. I didn't. I found a phone booth that smelled like a urinal next to a Greyhound station. When I stepped in and closed the door, it smelled even stronger, like I was suddenly inside a bum's bladder. The floor was sticky. This is what cell phones have done to phone booths in this country. Turned them into bathrooms. I called Little Willie. No, his name is not William, and yes, his dick is that small. Who's this? Was how he answered. Not one for etiquette. Little Willie, I need a favor. Ah, shit. Call someone else. Your favors are all used up in this town. It's not money. Seriously, try another city, another state. For Pete's sake, try Canada. I need an address. I explained my idea for an insurance policy. I don't know. That was better than a flat-out no. If there was room to weasel in there, I was just the weasel to do it. Little Willie, do I need to remind you of why you owe me a favor? I assume not. He paused, though. A little someone, slightly underage. I could hear him swallow hard. Delivered to your back door? How long has it been since he was last seen? You sure you want that address? I'm sure. It's all I got at this point. Well, you didn't get it from me. Of course not. I hung up the phone and left the phone booth and bumped into a guy in a soiled overcoat, ripped pants, and three layers of socks instead of shoes. I think he was waiting to use the urinal that I had been occupying with a phone call. I shuddered at the thought of how close I held the receiver to my mouth. Out on the street, I spat a few times on my way to Little Willie's place. He owned the whole three-story building. I only had inklings of what went on there, and I didn't really want to know the truth of what happened on the top floor, or, God forbid, the basement. I rang the buzzer. The lights were off. I waited and rang again. The mail slot opened and a slip of paper poked out. On it was an address. Willie? Take it and go. Fast. I don't want anyone to see you here. I snatched the paper. We're even, he said behind the closed door. Let me say a proper thanks, Little Willie. I hope I don't need to use this, but if I do, it's a lifesaver. Yeah, fuck off and don't come back. The mail slot snapped shut. I pocketed the slip of paper and felt the cold bite into me. It had to be 11:30 by now, so I had just enough time to get to Manny and try to song and dance him one more time about why I didn't have the 80 grand. The street was empty. I thought I could hear vague sounds coming from inside Little Willie's building, but nothing that sounded inviting. I started walking uptown. No cabs drove by. With the cold, there were no windows open to spill out the sounds of late-night TV or drunken arguments like usual. I guess money was tied all over, so people weren't really taking to the streets looking for fun. Even the dope dealers had stayed in. A cat hustled by in the gutter on the opposite side of the street. It was black with white ears, and it stayed low and moved fast. Just about when it got even with me, a large rat moved out from a storm drain and frightened the cat. It jumped up and yowled like a Halloween sound effects record, and the fight was on. The cat and rat tumbled and tussled in the gutter, rolling up into one big fur ball before somersaulting backward into the storm drain. I figured the cat for a goner once they were on the rat's home turf. I made it to the meeting place with 5 minutes to spare. I assumed that Briggs had more than just Manny there, but damned if I could see anyone else. An elevated train rolled by a block away, and that broke the silence for a beat. Not that I could hear anything from the scramble of ideas and plans that were firing off in my brain like the finale of a New Year's Eve fireworks show. Carlos had dumped me. I'd sworn in blood not to see Gina again, I played my card with Little Willie and still didn't have $80,000 to show for it. Manny's black Cadillac rolled to a stop. It was a vintage job and big as a parade float, and all 8 cylinders rumbled like an earthquake until he cut the engine. He got out alone. We met on the corner. I didn't see or hear another soul, but I knew Manny had friends close by, which was more than I could say. "We meet again," he said with a smile. "Third time's the charm," I added, trying to match his jovial mood. "Last time, I hope." I just shrugged. "I don't see a bag or anything," Manny said, peeking around my back to make sure I wasn't hiding anything. "You fit the 80 large in your pocket? Maybe you got it in $1,000 bills." Manny's way was not one of intentional intimidation. He went the reverse psychology route. Killed him with kindness. Killed is killed in my book. "Look, Manny, same as last week. Spare me the speech. If you could just knock it back down to the original 10, he arched an eyebrow my way. Okay, the 20. For a small fish like me, that's a message sent and received, loud and clear as glass, like the front windshield of that fine car you got there. He looked back over his shoulder at his prized vehicle. Any chance to talk about his baby? "I stopped at a red light down by the bridge. Homeless guy did the windows. Did a decent job, too. I gave him a 50. I nodded and smiled. What else could I do? "Look, I figured you didn't have the dough, so I brought you a present. I hope you don't think it was too presumptuous of me to do this before I made sure you didn't have it, but you don't, right?" I nodded again. "Right, so I got you this." He held out a small box like what you give a girl a bracelet in. It even had a bow on it. Nice touch. I took it and slid the bow off without untying it. I opened the lid on the box and my face got hot, even in the cold breeze. It was a finger. Mom's finger. An 82-year-old woman was now trying to use a walker with a missing finger on her left hand. I knew that because it still had her wedding ring on it, the ring that she hadn't taken off even in the 31 years since Dad died. When I looked up, Manny had moved right in front of me. He grabbed my lapel and pulled me up nose to nose with him. His breath only heated my face more. "The rest of her is stuffed into a drainpipe someplace you'll never know unless I put you there beside her." The cold, my grief, and the onions on his breath made my eyes start to water. "Now, I don't like doing that to an old woman, and I don't have a whole lot of other people on your list. Seems like you don't have too many people close to you that I can hurt so that you'd feel it. Next time, I come for you. And if that happens..." He left it at that. We both knew. Death would be a luxury at that point. The breaking of bones, pulling of fingernails, smashing of testicles, it was all part of his repertoire. I reached into my pocket and pulled the gun I'd gotten from Gina's apartment. I shoved it into Manny's gut and pulled the trigger 3 times fast before he could react. The gun clicked 3 times. Empty. Fucking Maurice. Manny hopped back like he'd just stepped on the third rail, but when no shots came, he stared at the gun for a beat and then up to me. "Did you just try to shoot me?" That's when I saw 4 other black-clad turtleneck types step out of the shadows that were obscured by other shadows. They stopped on the sidewalk and waited for Manny to signal something. I exhaled a breath, and it might as well have been my last. The steam cloud rose and dissipated just like my hope. "What a mistake," Manny said. I couldn't disagree. He took the gun from my hand, and I didn't resist. He turned the butt in his hand and brought it down on my nose. It cracked and filled the empty streets with sound. Manny raised the gun again and proceeded to pistol whip me for a good 5 minutes. I never raised a hand in defense or cried out in pain. I just dropped to my knees and waited for the end. When Manny had finished, more from his being out of breath than from any sense of completion to the task, he pocketed the gun for himself. From my perspective down in the gutter, I saw him smooth his hair back into place through my one open eye. $160,000 was all he said before getting back in his car and sparking the earthquake engine again. About 20 minutes later, I saw a man walking the street. He turned the corner and took a few steps before noticing me half on and half off the curb, my head down near the storm drain and my arm reaching out for help. He turned and walked back the way he came. I knew no one was going to do it for me, so I struggled to a crouch and felt around my face for signs of landmarks I might still recognize. I hadn't wanted to use it, but the time was now. The slip of paper in my pocket was my last resort, an address. Briggs's mother. 83 years old. Time to pay her a visit. Nothing left to lose. No money to wait for. If I couldn't get the 10, I sure as hell wasn't going to get 160. Manny had taken my gun, but I didn't need that to cut off a finger. Any old kitchen knife would do. Glad I saved the little box. Since I didn't undo it, I could even reuse the ribbon. I doubt I'd have the energy to stuff her in a drain pipe, but killed is killed in my book.
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.